Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, April 6th, 2013. This is episode 967. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup cost, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free. Up to 20 phones total. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, Samsung Galaxy phone, or other smartphone's worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about, well, you know, computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, home theater, GPS devices, you know, anything with a chip in it, 88, even if it's obsolete. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number if you have a question. 888-827-5536, toll free. From anywhere in the U.S., outside the U.S., you must call via some sort of voice over the internet protocol type device like Skype. But it should still be toll-free, 888-827-5536. Our website, techguylabs.com, that's where you'll find links to everything I talk about on the show. And when we start answering questions, then the answers will appear there. In fact, not right away, but later, the answers will appear in video. We actually post a video of the show, audio and video, so you can listen and watch as people ask and answer. TechGuyLabs.com. Well, Facebook did it on Thursday. We knew they were going to do something. They sent out invites to the tech press saying, come see our new home on Android. And on Thursday, they said what that is. And there was a lot of speculation. There's been speculation for years. It's really fun in the tech press. And if you're not kind of wired into the tech press, you're probably not even aware of the constant hurly-burly that goes on, the speculation over what's going to happen next from Google, Apple, Facebook, etc. People have been talking for years about a television set from Apple. The latest is a wristwatch from Apple. We're waiting for glasses from Google that we can wear. And there's been the same kind of burbling undercurrent about a Facebook phone for years. Literally, Facebook's developing a phone. And everybody wondered, why would Facebook do that? But it kind of makes sense. Well, it turns out it isn't exactly a phone. It's a Facebook launcher for Android. Now, I got to explain kind of for those of you who don't use Android devices, or some of you who just use them and don't really know kind of the guts of it. Android is very different from the iPhone. And on an Android device, and this would include a Galaxy, a Droid, anything running on the Google Android operating system, you can very easily change what's called the launcher. That's the thing you see when you turn the phone on. You know, the thing that shows you the apps, shows you the widgets, shows you the time and date and weather and all that. That you know, has the phone dialer on the screen and the messages, you know, text messages and all that stuff. That's called the launcher. On the Apple, every computer has one. Every computer has one, not just every phone. Every computer has one. On the Apple iPhone, that launcher's, you may not know this, called the Springboard. Bling. And it's not modifiable. It's Apple's way or the highway. But on Android, anybody can create a new launcher. In fact, many do. I don't typically use the launcher that comes with the phone. You know that Samsung has theirs. They call it TouchWiz. HTC has theirs. They call it Sense. Motorola has theirs. They call it unaccountably. They call it Blur. Because it blurs the phone. I don't know. That's a terrible... Anyway, don't get me started. But many of us use third-party launchers. I use one I love called Nova. In fact, I recommend it. It's free. And it's easy. You know, people who are experienced with the iPhone say, they might say, well, you've got to have to jailbreak it or root it or something. You know, you're going to have to. No, you just run the. It's a, you download it like an app from the Play Store, the Google Store, and you run it. And it says, would you like me to be your launcher now? And you say yes, and that's it. And in fact, you can go back in time and go back to the original launcher that came with your phone very simply. Android's a little like Windows. It has what we call default applications for things like launching YouTube links or email. And you can change the defaults by just managing the applications in the settings. You can say, I don't want you to be the launcher anymore. Go away. I want the original launcher back. So it's a very easy customization. So it turns out this is what Facebook has done. They've created a new launcher. It's called Facebook Home. And I think very much influenced, interestingly, by Microsoft's Windows phone, because it's very people-centric. You know, the Windows phone has a people hub that combines messages from your friends from Facebook, from Twitter, from email, from pictures into one kind of pretty little rotating tile, which you can then open, and then it's a hub. The Facebook Home is kind of like this, except it's the full screen. There are no buttons. Danny Sullivan, a search engine land commentator on search, has pointed out that Facebook kind of buries Google search on most Android phones. Google search is always front and center. You know, there's a little search icon or a search button. But on the new Facebook Home launcher, it's two clicks deep. You have to search for search, which I don't know. But it's really focused on people. It says you don't care about apps. You care about people. You can launch apps, sure, but what you really care about is what your friends are up to. It's an interesting idea. Now, there is, in a way, a phone, because HTC has announced, yeah, we're going to offer a phone on AT&T in a week, April 12th, called the HTC First. You know how on forums or chat rooms and stuff, when you're the first comment on a blog, you write first, that annoying thing that people do? Well, HTC is doing it first. So this phone comes with it for people who don't want to get involved with changing their launcher. But they've already said, at the same time as that comes out in a week, we will offer on the Play Store, we'll offer Facebook Home. And anybody who has an appropriate phone, and not all phones will work, but most modern phones will, the Galaxies all will, can put Facebook Home on here. So the question everybody's asking, and we really won't know till we can sit down and observe, is how much. We've seen what it looks like. There's videos you can watch about Facebook Home. How much data Facebook is now going to gather about you? People assume that if Facebook's doing it, they're doing it because what's their business? Gathering information about you and then selling it to advertisers. So people assume this is a kind of a broad reach, a broad grab by Facebook to find out not only who your friends are, what your interests are, but where you are at any given time, because your phone knows that. Phone even knows how fast you're moving. Maybe Facebook could use that. You're going 75 miles an hour. Maybe they'd try to sell you a fuzz buster. I don't know. You'll need a radar detector if you're going to travel that fast. Or if you're traveling 2 miles an hour, maybe you'd like a cane. I don't know. But this is the point. Facebook will now know a lot about you. Facebook has said, we're not going to know any more than we did before, which isn't very reassuring. We won't know more than than the tons of stuff we know about you already. But they could collect more from the phone. And we won't really be sure. I consider Facebook's denials about this to be kind of non-denial denials. They don't explicitly, do they explicitly say, they say, well, we're not going to look at what other apps know about you. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. So my question for you today is, A, are you interested in this new Facebook Home? Will you try it? I will. I'm not going to buy an HTC First, but I am going to buy, in fact, I already have ordered from AT&T the HTC One, which is a new phone that comes out April 16th, and it's a very nice phone. And that I can install Home on. I probably will. You know, the nice thing about it is you can install it, try it. You don't like it 10 days later or 1 day later or 1 minute later. You can say, you, and go back. So it's not a very permanent. But do you want Home? Do you like the features of it, if what you've heard? And are you concerned that maybe it will give Facebook a chance to gather even more information? Now, remember, it's not information that isn't already presumably being gathered by your cell phone carrier. They gather all this telemetry, and maybe even by Google. Do you trust Facebook more than you trust your cell carrier or Google? Are you willing to give them this information? Do you even care? I don't know if I care. 8888-ASK-LEO. It's kind of a big grab from Facebook for more personal information about you. What do you think? I can answer your other questions, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're on.
Who's my first caller? Nathan? Can you tell
Dave.
Me? Dave. And where are you from, Dave?
Ridgecrest, California.
Hey, Dave, how are you? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome.
Pretty good. Yes.
Yes.
HP computer.
Yeah.
And also, because I have a vision problem, I run a magnifier.
Okay. You use the Windows magnifier built in?
Window at the bottom. And when I go to close it down, I can't. The bottom of the drop down menu goes behind the magnifier. So what I just do is Control Alt Delete and then pick the close button. Well, also when I go away, because it takes so long to boot up, when I close it down or go away for a while, I'll just put it on hibernate. Yesterday I did that and I came back and I opened it up. And the window that comes up for when I hit the close, alt, delete, has been really hacked up. The buttons, the taskbar, there's no taskbar up there or whatever you call them, where the minimize button and the close button are. And also there's a toolbar that allows me to go, you know, from looking at what processes are running to what programs are running. I can't do that anymore. It just comes up in the processes.
Well, I have no idea, Dave. It sounds like something went wrong.
Yeah.
You know, probably, there's two possibilities, and Windows does this all the time. I've got a brand new installation of Windows 8, and Internet Explorer crashes every fifth or sixth page. That's a brand new, fresh installation. So it's not, it's, we're living in a house of cards here. You know, there's something like 20 million lines of code. That means there's 20 million places that something can go wrong. And all it takes is a flipped bit. So it's hard for me to tell. I can't even really tell from your description what's wrong, but it's obvious there's something wrong. And I don't even know where to begin about fixing this, to be honest with you, Dave. You've obviously done the reboot, and it's still doing that. There is a repair mode in Windows you might want to try if you've got your Windows installer or your recovery disks. When you run the installer, right before it actually does anything, it says, Windows is so stupid. Oh, I see you have a copy of Windows already installed. Would you like me to repair it? And you say, yes, press R to repair, press R. And try that. And what that does is it scans through the files and it says, oh, this is missing, this is corrupt, this is damaged, and it tries to fix it. It could also be, and this is the problem, and I can't really be sure without actually looking at your screen, that it's merely, you know, it's possible. I had an 11-year-old using my Windows machine the other day, and I came back, and the taskbar was all the way up there, and stuff, you know, stuff was moved around. It's very easy to accidentally drag the taskbar, make it bigger or smaller. You might... Spare Parts Paul in the chat room is suggesting it's not a bad idea going to a restore point, a previous restore point, see if that makes it better. Restarting from Hibernate is not a restart. You want to really do a shutdown or a full restart, because all Hibernate is, and you should understand what Hibernate is. Hibernate saves, there's three different kind of shutdown states in Windows. One is just sleep, where it's continuing to refresh the memory with electricity. That uses more electricity, of course, but it means you get right back to work. So when it's sleeping, it turns off the screen, it turns off the hard drive, it kind of goes into as low a power mode as it can. But one kind of key thing about RAM, the storage where your data and your programs are sitting, is it needs electricity or it'll lose all its contents. So the machine is continuing to refresh RAM with electricity. That's sleep. There is a lower power state called hibernate, where, in fact, the machine is turned off. But before it's turned off, it takes the contents of RAM, a gigabyte, 4 gigabytes, 8 gigabytes, however much RAM you have, and saves it to the hard drive. That's why when you go into a hibernate mode, there's a lot of disk activity, 20-second delay, and then it looks like it's turned off. It is, in fact, basically powered down. But when you start it up again, the machine, instead of starting from scratch, actually loads the contents of RAM, of memory, from the hard drive. It wakes up. So hibernate is a way to maintain your exact state, what windows are open, what programs are running, through a powered-down environment. And, of course, the third state is completely powered down. I want you to do if you haven't, I hope you have, anytime this happens, you should do this, do a full power-down or a full restart, not a hibernate. Because if there's a problem in RAM, things got munged up, it saved it, and it's preserved it, and it's restored it. So let's try a full restart, Dave. If it's still happening, then it's probably time to either do a restore or a repair from Windows. Not sure exactly what's going on there, because it's hard from a description to know. Dan in Sewell, New Jersey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dan. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Leo.
Hi, welcome.
Thanks. I've been a big fan for a long time now. One of these days I'll make it out to Twit. I've been following you guys since you were part of this Davis, so it's great to see you around.
Thank you.
But I had a quick question for you. I'm in one of the founding astronomy clubs of the country, and coming up in April, towards the end of the month in Philadelphia, we're having the Philadelphia Science Festival. And the Astronomy Club is coming up to the 21st century, and we started our own YouTube channel. And what I'm planning on doing is I have my D7000, and I'm going to do a SM58 directly into the D7000. And I wanted to get a microphone flag and was wondering if you could recommend...
Now, come on. Admit it, Dan. This is all just a way of plugging your YouTube channel. What's your YouTube channel? What's
not
your
all,
yeah? No. Come on, what's your YouTube channel? Tell me.
It's Rittenhouse Astronomical Society on YouTube.
Inhouse AS YouTube.com/inhouse. I think I've got it wrong. Spell it inhouse. Inhouse.
Rittenhouse. Rittenhouse.
Ritt. What is Ritt?
It's, David Rittenhouse was.
Oh, Rittenhouse. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
If you just said Rittenhouse, I would have known. Okay. So you can get a mic flag pretty much anywhere. Just Google mic flag, and you'll see there's a wide variety of mic flags available. And I think you probably knew that. I love it when people – it's fine. I don't mind. Let's plug it. YouTube.com/Rittenhouse. Like Rittenhouse Square. Like Rittenhouse Square. Amateur astronomers. It's so cool. And, astronomy is one of the few fields. You don't see a lot of amateur particle physicists.
Yeah, I got a particle accelerator in the backyard. We're trying to find a Higgs boson.
You don't see a lot of that. But you see a lot of amateur astronomers. In fact, many asteroids and planetary bodies and all sorts of stuff discovered by amateurs in their backyard with a telescope. A mic flag, just so you know, is, you see it on TV. Channel 7 News, it's a little plastic thing on the mic, and pretty much, just Google it and you'll find it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Look who's here. It's Scott Wilkinson, a home theater guy. Scott.
<Woo-hoo. laughs>
Scott is the content editor for the AVS Forum, which has always been, for many, many years, a great source of information about audio and video. I used them as a primary source for Hacking the TiVo back in the day. That must have been 2004, 2005.
And you probably got tons of advice on how to do
that. Great place for that. Yeah. He's also an editor at HomeTheaterHiFi.com, The Secrets of Home Theater and Hi-Fi, and does a podcast for us, Home Theater Geeks, every Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Twitter. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going well.
What's the deal?
What's new in home theater?
Oh, tons of stuff, as always. Wanted to draw your attention to AVS Forum. I've just put up a poll that I know you'll have something to say about. Is the end of physical media inevitable?
Now, see, that group is probably going to say so faster than real people. I always have this conversation in my head because you and I live in a bubble, an unnatural universe surrounded by, in my case, computer geeks, in your case, AV and home theater geeks. Yep. And the needs, interests, wants, desires, and even worldview of the enthusiast very different from a normal person.
It's
so
true.
I think normal people, I just bought a Blu-ray disc of The Hobbit. I think normal people, if you say, is physical media dead? They say, wait a minute, what? Whoa.
Whoa.
I got a DVD player. I got a Blu-ray player. I got a CD player. Is it dead? What do you mean, Scott? What do you mean?
Well, there's a lot of people who are saying that with the rise of streaming and downloading, you know, when you can go to Netflix and you can go to iTunes and Amazon and Vudu and Hulu and basically watch what you want when you want on the internet, what's the point of physical media?
Well, now, there is a point, of course, and this is where the enthusiast will jump in and say, well, Mr. Wilkins, there is a point, you know, because there's nothing higher quality than a Blu-ray disc.
Which is true, which is absolutely true. And one thing I'm doing on AVS Forum, Mark Henninger, one of our writers, is doing, is he's undertaken a great project of looking at Vudu HDX, which is its highest quality streaming.
They claim 1080p, which is
the same as
a Blu-ray, right?
That's right.
In theory.
However, they use a lot more compression. Yeah.
Because nobody has enough bandwidth, or few have enough bandwidth to stream true Blu-ray quality.
Exactly. And yet, he's doing this comparison between Blu-ray.
I can't wait to see the results, yeah.
Yeah, well, there are several of them up there already. He most recently did the movie Lincoln, which is very challenging because it's very dark.
Yeah.
As he points out in his little write-up, you know, in the Civil War, everybody wore black head to toe.
And it was candlelit. And of course,
yes, exactly. Exactly.
And of course, Steven Spielberg really wanted to make this authentic.
Yes.
So everything's lit by fires, by candles.
Yep.
It is. And so is dark harder to do for streaming than it is for Blu-ray?
Yes. Huh. It's hard to do, period, because the gradations in black, in dark gray, are extremely difficult to render well, both on the display side for the TV or the projector or whatever, but also on the compression side. And as we just mentioned, because we don't have as much bandwidth coming into our homes from the internet as we do in a Blu-ray player directly connected to the TV, then you know, they have to compress a lot more.
So you're saying there's 50 shades of gray?
Yes.
So to speak. And actually, this is you. I know you use or used to use Master and Commander, the movie, as a way to look at TVs because it had a very dark opening scene.
That opening scene where the watchman is walking through the lower decks as everybody else is sleeping in their creaking hammocks.
Right. And
it's really a good scene.
It's a measure of how much detail you could see on a TV, but even on a streaming.
In the dark portions of the scale. Exactly. It's called shadow detail.
And then the other thing that happens with compression is you could see, and if you try this on watch a Netflix movie or a Vudu or iTunes movie, is you'll see little squares of different shades of gray.
Exactly.
That's the compression.
That's exactly right. This is called macro blocking.
It's ugly.
It's ugly, yes. Yeah. It's very ugly. And you'll also see banding, which is, I guess, sort of a form of macro blocking, where as something slowly changes from one shade to another, you see these solid bands. And it's more evident sometimes than another. And one of the really cool things that Mark's doing is he's a professional photographer by trade, so he is taking photographs of his screen with all these different sources and showing us, comparing still shots of different from the different providers.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
Oh, it's really good. Yeah. AVSforum.com on the homepage. We've got the Lincoln one is now up there along with this poll. Interestingly, most enthusiasts are voting physical media is here to stay. And I tend to believe it's wishful thinking. I do tend to think it is here to stay. One of the choices is it's here to stay, but it's only going to be a niche market, like for enthusiasts, like LP.
Right.
Vinyl LPs are still here.
Right.
But, you know, it's not a mass market thing anymore.
So, you know, I think about music, which is a little smaller, and so as a result, you can definitely download in a reasonable amount of time a CD quality track
or higher. I got to tell you, I visited a studio yesterday of a guy who is recording live performances at very high resolutions, and he's going to be releasing that on Blu-ray.
Isn't that Neil Young's plan too? He's got this new Pogo player.
Yeah, I don't know much about that. I have to look into that.
He's got deals with most of the record companies, because I guess the record companies now do record it higher than CD quality when they're making the records.
They do. And then they down convert it into the CD quality.
The Pono, that's the name, not Pogo. So he says, well, why don't we make available as downloads the original quality recordings, but you'll need a special player and so forth.
I would buy it.
I think you could. Well, anyway, but the point is, physical media in the music industry really is going away. Petaluma, a small town I live in, doesn't have a records or CD store anymore.
No.
It's gone. I mean, you can go to Walmart, I guess, and Best Buy, but we had record stores. They're gone.
Yeah, it's
true. In fact, I think all the movie rental stores are gone, too, which maybe, you know, maybe says a lot, too.
There's still a Blockbuster video rental store where I live,
and
I just every time
here.
I drive by, I'm wondering how long are they going to be?
Yeah, it's a
the
beauty
Tower
salon
Records,
now.
Yeah, right
in Petaluma.
The Tower Record Store on Sunset, a very famous record store, has been lying empty since Tower closed all their record stores. Yeah. There's a move afoot to make it a historical landmark
in San Francisco. The very famous Tower Record is now a dry cleaners. So if you want to get your clothes cleaned, you can go
there. At the old Tower Record Store. Yeah. I used to go shopping there all the time.
It's a wonderful store.
Yeah,
you may laugh, physical media is not dead. Well, look at the music industry, and I think it's starting to happen. You know, I'm looking at his comparisons of Voodoo versus Blu-ray of Lincoln, and, you know, it's just a little softer on Voodoo. You don't have the crispness, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In the best case, that may be what's happening. In the worst case, you actually see some macro blocking and some banding and some all sorts of horrible things. And of course, the AVS forum crowd are all looking for the absolute best quality they can possibly get.
You know, it's interesting. iTunes, at least on this sample image, is the best of the three download services. Amazon, the word. Well, that's SD, Amazon.
Yeah, that's SD. Yeah. He just threw that in for comparison.
Just so you know how bad it can get.
Exactly.
Very interesting. That's good. AVSforum.com to find out more about that. Exactly. Who's your guest this week on the Home Theater Geeks show?
My Home Theater Geeks guest this week, my guest geek, is Tile Hertzens, the editor of InnerFidelity.com. He's an expert on headphones.
This is a hot category because
it is.
It's a big profit center. Yeah, there's a lot of very expensive,
very entertaining guy, too. So do tune in for that.
Scott Wilkinson, HomeTheaterHiFi.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Steve is in Riverside, California, our next caller. Hi, Steve. Leo Laporte here. Don't get in an accident now, okay?
I'm walking. Okay. I've got a question. I have a home office, and I work from home, and every time I leave my desk, my wife and kids jump on my computer. So I went out and bought my wife a computer to get them off of mine.
You're a nice man. I would have just password protected mine. In fact, that's what I did. Of course, then they beg you for the password, and eventually you give them the password, and you're back where at square one.
I bought her an iMac, and I've never owned a Mac. And I've been trying to set wireless printing up to my Xerox printer from my wife's iMac. And I've got a router, just the two computers, the PC and the new iMac. And the iMac can see the Internet just fine through the router that I had, which is a Motorola router. I have a Motorola modem, and for some reason the iMac would not connect to the printer wirelessly. I've got another laptop, PC-based laptop that I can print to wirelessly.
It's probably a driver issue. It's a driver issue. Yeah. So the printer is connected via USB to the router?
The printer is connected via an Ethernet cable to the router.
So it's a network printer.
Yes.
So it's on the network. And right. When you add printer on the Macintosh, it doesn't see it at all?
No, it just said drivers unavailable. And I got Apple's second-level support over a 45-day period, and they couldn't solve it. They even did that little capture thing where you send them the file.
Well, if drivers are unavailable, then drivers are unavailable.
Well, the drivers are available.
Oh, there are Xerox printer drivers?
Yeah, and it just wouldn't. It would bomb out every time I tried to download it to give me an error message. So they said,
How do you know that drivers are available?
They told me they were. They went to their website and found it there for my printer.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I wonder if it's compatible. You know, it's an older printer. Maybe it's is it compatible with the drivers?
Well, they told me your the drivers are there, but we can't see it from where we sit. So your best bet is to go out and buy one of our Airport Extreme routers. And
of course, it would work with their product. Should work with yours. A network printer is a network printer. The only reason it wouldn't work is if you didn't have the right drivers. You're seeing the printer, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's just not connecting to the printer. So regardless of what Apple's support is saying, your computer is saying, and unfortunately your computer wins in this case, they ain't got no drivers. So how is it when you go to the ad printer, is it seeing it? What section of the ad printer is it seeing in IP-based? Is it seeing it in as a Bonjour? Is it seeing it as a Windows printer? What's it seeing it as?
The Bonjour did come up.
Okay.
That was a good sign.
That is a good sign. It means it recognizes the printer. What's the model of the printer?
It's a Xerox 8560 MFP, which stands for multifunction printer.
The 8650.
No, 8560.
8560. is it how recently did you buy this? It's current, isn't it? They're still selling this. So there should be drivers for this.
Right. The printer's about 5 years old, but it's a $3,000 printer.
I understand you don't want to replace it, although you can get modern laser printers for about a tenth of the cost that are roughly equivalent. I'm just going to look at the Xerox site. Let's see what Xerox says if they have Mac drivers. Have you tried that? Have you gone to the Xerox page? Yeah, print and scan driver installer for Mac. Unfortunately, it says 10.5. You've got 10.8, I'm sure, on that iMac. Have you downloaded this printer driver from the Xerox site?
Yes, with Apple's help.
With Apple's help. Yeah, you know, Apple doesn't know. The problem with this is it says it's supported up to Lion, not Mountain Lion.
Okay.
So my guess is that Xerox needs to update these drivers and probably will. Mountain Lion's fairly new. Let me look here. The chat room's giving me a link. When this happens, it's because you're getting right up to the point where it would see it.
Right.
And then it's saying, I can't install it.
Right.
Ah, here we go. It's a different page. Print driver installer for 10.8 is on the Xerox page. So I'll tell you what, they did just update this. I'm thinking that you did the same thing I did, which did the search for it and found an earlier one. So this one says it is compatible with Mountain Lion. It is for the 8560. I bet you if you download this, everything will work. If not, there are ways to get printers working with the Mac if the company, Xerox in this case, doesn't make a driver and Apple doesn't make a driver. There's a system called CUPS, which is a Linux-based printer. You know, in the early days of Linux, nobody supported it. So they had to create their own kind of open-source driver system called CUPS. And it works with Mac because Mac is essentially based on a Unix operating system, BSD. So you might try, and this is a little more complicated, search for CUPS drivers for that printer and install those. But I'm going to put a link in the show notes. James, if you would, to that link that that was just posted here in the chat room. And thanks to Donald Kelly for posting those. That is different from the print driver that I found when I searched. And it does say specifically that it works with 10.8. So it sounds like Xerox has two drivers available on their website. And you'll need to update to 10.8. That's always the problem. And it is a little tricky. But I think people often say, oh, it's a Mac. It's not going to work because this is kind of a Windows-based router. And that's not the case. Wi-Fi, printer sharing, all of that is platform independent. It doesn't care Mac, PC. It should work just fine if and only if you've got this little piece of software they call it a driver. The driver is what tells the hardware how to speak to the peripheral. I would guess that this will fix it. I hope it does for you. I don't think you should run out and get an Apple router. If you had no router, I would say, yeah, fine. The Apple AirPort Extreme is expensive. It's about 2 to 3 times more than a comparable PC router. I think they do some things better. I remember I had a Comcast cable installer come in, and I had two routers in a box on the table. And he said, you're not going to install that Linksys, are you? I said, what do you mean? He said, use the Apple router. So here's a guy out in the field who has a lot of experience. It's been my experience, too. The Apple router, it does a very good job. But it has some features that are, I think, better. For instance, it doesn't support this huge security flaw that a lot of other routers do. The universal plug and play flaw is not on the Mac side. So if you didn't have a router, spending almost $300 on an Apple router might be worth it. But since you already do, I wouldn't. It's just a software issue. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, going to take a break for local news at the top of the hour. But I tell you what, we will be back. We'll help Todd organize his links, sausage or otherwise, right after this. Well, hey, how are you? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number if you have a question. You want to talk about tech, our website, techguylabs.com. Great place to go to get additional information about anything we talk about. And, of course, after the fact, we put video and audio of the show up there so you can listen and watch the question and answer. And even, and I hope you would, add your thoughts, your comments, your additions, your corrections, that kind of thing. TechGuyLabs.com. While you're there, you'll find a link also to our chat room. Oh, there's, I don't know how many people, usually around almost 1,000 in there, which makes it a kind of a busy chat room. But, boy, it's sure a lot of fun. And I use it because the people in the chat room help me with links and information. So they're kind of 739. Thank you, Donald Kelly. They're kind of our, that's how many people are in there. They're kind of our Greek chorus, our expert panel, our my lifeline. If I have I'd like to get a lifeline, please. Chat room help. So you could join us by either going just straight to irc.twit.tv or to the website, techguylabs.com. Let's talk about links. Todd on the line from Perdonia, New York. Hail, hail, Perdonia. Hi, Todd.
Hey, Leo. I have a Google Doc that's got a whole bunch of links in it. I had the opportunity, I guess it was about a year ago, to write an article about links for theater technology, in particular theater lighting. And at the end of the article, I just put a Google Doc up of all of the links that I used for the article and then the other ones I found in my research. Well,
that's a nice way to share it, isn't it? Because you can share it publicly, costs you no bandwidth, and everybody can kind of go to it.
Yeah, and yeah. When it was about 50 links, it was nice.
Was it a spreadsheet or a word processor?
Spreadsheet,
okay.
And I had about 50 links, and I just checked this morning, and I've now got almost 300 links.
Oh, people are adding them.
Well, no, just myself.
Oh, okay.
I'm adding them. And I'd like to share this in a little better way than just a big spreadsheet.
Right.
Wanting to know if you had any suggestions. I've looked at things like Delicious, but it doesn't really seem to do exactly what I want it to do.
Yeah, I mean, this is really how blogging started. In the early days, blogs were just what we call link rolls, lists of links to other things. And some of the best bloggers out there continue to pretty much do that, like Waxy Links, Scott Bio, and if you're a Mac fan, of course, you know John Gruber's website, Daring Fireball. They're really just a collection of links. Even BoingBoing.net, which is a collection of wonderful things, is really just a collection of links with some commentary. I don't use Delicious anymore, but you know, for a while I was a little worried that Yahoo was, you know, not working with Delicious. They were kind of letting it die, and it's kind of come back. But I moved to something called Pinboard, that is another way of aggregating links. And Pinboard has the ability to make some links or all links public. Problem is, people then have to go to a kind of obscure website. The links are presented nicely as just a series of titles, of headlines that you can click, and you can add commentary if you want. That's what I use right now. When I'm collecting stories for this show and other shows, I aggregate them on Pinboard. So I take a look at pinboard.in. But probably my suggestion these days for people who want to share links is Google Plus, a really good place to share links. And what you can do is share multiple links in a single Plus post, or encourage people to follow you on Google Plus. And then, you know, if you look at what's on Google Plus, for the most part, it's a bunch of links. And a lot of people do this. Now, you don't have to have a Google account to read it, but you do have to have a Google account if you want to interact, you know, comment, plus one it. And, of course, you'll have to have a Google account. And most people have a Google account. But it's nice to put it somewhere where people don't even need an account. They could just go there and look. I like the presentation Google gives. If the link is properly formatted, and most people do the right thing, for instance, YouTube, it'll show a little thumbnail of the article that you're linking to. If it's a video, they'll show a little bit of the video. Amazon does it. A lot of people do this, which makes it even nicer. Have you tried Google Plus at all, Todd?
I have for my personal stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't tried this yet, because right now all of my links are either to the App Store or the Google Play Store. And what I'd love is I'd love to get that picture in, to get that picture of the app.
Yeah, I think it would with Play. I don't know. I would guess it would with the App Store. You know, Apple has a kind of a unique way of doing App Store links. You could type appstore.com. This is not widely known. And then the name of the app. And the App Store it will resolve that as a link to the App Store. Yeah, in fact, it looks like it. Yeah, it doesn't. It does look like iTunes will do the right thing if you give it an appropriate link to an App Store page. So I think that'd be a good one. And you could. It's kind of not great for multiple links in a single post. But on the other hand, if people are following you, you can kind of parse them out. It also encourages them to follow you. You could do it, of course, on Facebook, but then they have to have a Facebook account, which is less desirable. You could do it on Twitter, but I think for a lot of people who aren't geeks, Twitter might be a little confusing.
Is there a way on Google Plus to do tagging? Because what I'd like to do is, if it's, say, a lighting app, then they could be able to click on, hey, here are the lighting apps that do this. Here's
You should use hashtags. Google Plus supports it. So if you have a pound and a text, that becomes a hot link that you could then click, and Google Plus will then do a search of all the other Google Plus posts with that in there. I think for sharing link content, if you don't want to do your own website, which of course would be the best way to do this, and you must have a website, right?
Yes.
Another way to do this would be create a website for this topic. On WordPress.com or Blogger.com or Squarespace.com. That one's not free, but the other two are. And then just make that a link roll. And then you could just say, you know, hey, go to ToddSite.com and I have everything there. And that would be a way to capture more traffic. Another good one that people love for sharing links, I've almost forgotten. Thank you, Citizen X, in the chat room for reminding me, is Tumblr. T-U-M-B-L-R. That's free. And Tumblr is designed to share quotes, images, links. It's a very easy user interface, and Tumblr might be even the better way than Google Plus, come to think of it. But anyway, there's some good choices for you. What's the subject? What's the subject matter?
It's apps for theater lighting, theater sound.
And oh, cool. Yeah, Tumblr would be a really good thing for that. You know, that's a kind of a common thing on Tumblr is to somebody say, I'm going to make a theater lighting Tumblr. And then you follow them in your Tumblr dashboard and you see all the theater lighting stuff. They support tags as well. And people can reblog you, which means, you know, other theater lighting folks might add you to their blog, which would then drive people towards your traffic, right? Your blog. So I you know what? I think Citizen X nailed it. Let's narrow it down. All of those are ways to do it, but boy, a Tumblr is made for this kind of thing. It really, that's what a Tumblog was originally, was a just kind of a stream of links, images. Good pick. Thank you. And good luck, Todd. That sounds like a great subject to share. This is what the internet's made of. It's made of people. If you have something that you're passionate about, the narrower and more obscure, the better, really, in some ways, because you may be the one or two, you know, expert on this topic. The internet is a great place to go and create a site sharing your passion and your enthusiasm. That's what makes the internet, is all of these crazy, passionate people obsessively, you know, store all their stuff online. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nobody's yet devised a way for a company to work without meetings. They're essential.
Let me turn this down so I can talk to you about something very dear and near to my heart.
RingCentral.com. Oh, I love RingCentral.com. It's our phone system. It's what we use here in the Brick House studios. It's cool because, you know, we didn't want, like, you know, first of all, we do everything in the cloud, right? And I was a little nervous about the idea of having a PBX in the basement, leasing it from AT&T and having the technicians program. I just thought, I don't want to do that. That's so 80s. I want something this century. Russell, our IT guy, who is very much of this century, said, hey, you ought to try RingCentral. I've installed this in a lot of clients' installations. I know all about it, so I can help you. And boy, are we glad we did. That was a year and a half ago, and it's worked flawlessly. It is a cloud-based PBX, essentially. Very easy to set up. You just buy the phone and plug it in, basically, just like you would kind of on a real system. But I can completely control it with all sorts of nice features. Things like the ability to have phone calls come to my cell phone as well as my desk phone. I can originate phone calls from my smartphone that look like they're coming from the business line. Even texts, business texting back and forth from our 800 number. All of this starts at $20 per user per month, which is a great deal. And right now, you can try it free for 30 days when you use our offer code TWIT at ringcentral.com. Plus, when you buy a phone, they'll give you a second phone free. Up to 20 phones. That's a good deal. RingCentral is, now this is for a small business or even a medium-sized or big business that wants the functionality of kind of the cloud with no startup costs, no PBX hardware. Faxes come into your inbox. So do text and voice messages. You can be in many locations. Great for a business that has multiple locations. You get one number and it can go anywhere. You get the directory tree. If you call our 800 number at Twit, you'll see RingCentral really is great. We love it. Our producers love it, too, because they can use their smartphones. 800-543-9980 to find out more. 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT, TWIT. And StrengthX asks, how does it work on ISPs that put everyone behind, and that works great. It's amazing. You are using internet protocol for your voice, but boy, the quality is superb. It works just great. And boy, is it affordable. RingCentral.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 888-ASK. Leah, we were talking to Todd, and he says, I have all these links for lighting directors, and he's given me the link to the spreadsheet on Google Docs. It's amazing. These are all apps for lighting directors. bit.ly/theater apps, and he spells theater the old school way, T-H-E-A-T-R-E, not E-R, R-E. bit.ly. Well, you know what? We'll put it in the show notes, techguylabs.com. But boy, is that complete. Everything's in there. This is my friend Veronica Belmont did something similar to this. She hosts a show called Techzilla, and they were trying to figure out what capabilities different set-top boxes like Roku and Apple TV and all, you know, WDTV, all these, and there's so many different kinds. So she created a spreadsheet set-top boxes that she then opened to the public and said, look, add, because I, you know, I have only can review a few, add your experiences. If you go to bit.ly, bit.ly/set-top, you'll see what she's done there and what, well, at this point, everybody else has done there. I mean, huge number of variety. And the old version is also there if you want to see, like, the ginormous spreadsheet. But this is great because every set-top box, Roku and TiVo and, you know, Google TV, the Seagate Free Agent, all these, they all have different capabilities. Some can do this, some can do that. There's no one that can do everything, boxy box. So this is a great way to figure out, well, I want to do this, this, and this. Which one will do that? And it's a really good example of using Google Docs as a kind of collaborative environment where people can add, you know, this is, I remember when Veronica made this, this has gone way beyond what Veronica originally did. It's become extremely complex and rich. Very nice. So that's a good example of how you can use this, you know, Google Docs, not just for your own stuff to share or even to share documents, but to share the work. Stephen on the line from somewhere. Hi, Stephen. Where are you calling from, Stephen?
I'm calling from Willoughby, Ohio.
Hey, welcome.
Thank you. This is kind of apropos to the last caller. It's about blogs.
Okay.
In 2009, I went to China just after you got back. But I think I went the week you came back.
What an amazing trip.
Oh, it was great. Yeah,
unbelievable. Yeah.
A couple of weeks. I think I went to a few of the same places as you.
Neat.
But, of course, I had the problem with updating Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of thing. So I used Posterous.
That's what I did. You must have been listening to me as I...
I was.
Yeah.
Yep. It was good advice as well, because it really worked beautifully. All my posts went up. It cross-posted to Twitter and everything. Looked fantastic.
So here's the problem that Steve and I both had, which is at the time we were in China, and I think it's still true, Facebook and Twitter were being blocked. You couldn't use your normal social networks. You couldn't just post. But Posterous allows you to email. See, they can't block email. That would just bring the whole nation to its knees. So Posterous allowed you to email this content to Posterous, which would then route it appropriately to YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you said. And at the same time, make a blog. But I know where you're going with this, Stephen, because Twitter bought Posterous.
And they've done the dirty on it.
They shut it down.
They have, yes. And, you know, they did a half-baked solution where they have a backup solution. This is more of a public service announcement than a call. I tried to use their backup facility and bring it into WordPress, and it was just a bit of a disaster. Oh. All the video links broke. Oh. My pictures all linked back to my original Posterous page. So, of course, when that gets...
So they don't... Yeah, because they're not going to... Thank you, Twitter. Thank you so very much, you know?
Yeah.
But it is a reminder, Stephen, and something we should all keep in mind, that none of these services, especially the free ones, are guaranteed to go forever. They won't. We know they won't.
You get what you pay for. You've always said that, but that's part of the solution that I think is going to work. One of the original founders that had a bit of a falling out with the guy that sold out to Twitter has started a new one called Posthaven.
Oh!
Now, it's a paid service. They charge you $5.
Good! Good. They may stick around.
The whole point is they're going to stick around. So I was on, mine is can I plug my...
Yeah, yeah. By the way, this is Stephen's a regular in our chat room, Scotland calling. But I thought you were in Edinburgh, not Willoughby, Ohio.
Well, I moved to Willoughby, Ohio in 2009.
Oh, all this time I thought, because I saw you once posted a picture of the Edinburgh Castle out your window. Maybe you have you're like Sarah Palin, you got a good view from Willoughby, Ohio.
I can see it from my doorstep.
Anyway, so it's great to talk to you. Long time chatter.
I moved my blog over to chinatrip.posthaven.com. We'll see if it brings it down. And you know, it did a fantastic job. All the images were preserved. All the comments were preserved. You can do galleries and things like that. All of that was preserved. It looks great. It's not quite there yet, and they're still in beta, so they're not actually charging you the $5 until they come out of beta. But it does such a terrific job of the import.
Hallelujah. Stephen, I'm so grateful because, you know, Posterous is going to kill all of our content at the end of the month.
And it just gets deleted, you know?
It just gets deleted.
Like, we put so much effort into this.
Yeah.
The first page is kind of okay, but the good page is starting the second page.
Well, this is great news, and I'm going to immediately move my data over to Posthaven. I had a blog called Leo Leposterous. I don't know what I'm going to call it now. Leo Leposthaven, I guess.
If you've got more than one, your $5 gets you 10 addresses.
You know, that's great.
You can, once you've set up your first one, you can then go in and add more. And they're so responsive. There were a few bugs, and I emailed them. They emailed me back within a day with fixing them and, you know, thanking me for the input and everything. I think there's just two guys working on it just now, so I really wanted to give them a cheer because
Stephen, thank you. Thank you.
They are baking there.
Thank you. So, in fact, it's funny. Right on the front page, it says, websites come and go. This one is made to last forever. Our pledge to you will never be acquired. We'll always keep your URLs or, you know, your addresses online. We'll always keep it the best place to post. I don't know how they can really pledge that, but it certainly makes sense if they're charging money because, well, then it just, and it's funny because we were talking earlier about links and I said I moved from Delicious to Pinboard. And one of the reasons I did is because Pinboard charged. And people said, well, wait a minute, you can do it for free at Delicious. Yeah, but we don't know what's going to happen to Delicious. Yahoo could kill it at any moment. You want to be on a site where there's a business model.
Yeah, and it'd be nice if they got some scale, if they got some people transferring over, because it helps the community.
Well, you've done a good job of letting people know. I don't know how many people used Posterous.
It's a bit of a plug, I'm sorry, but I'm not linked to them in any way other than being one of their customers.
In this case, I'm going to give you a pass for two reasons. One, because I think I love your accent, but and because you're such a great contributor in chat, but two, because I have a Posterous blog, and I think there may be others, and this is a solution I had not heard about, so I'm very grateful to you. And, of course, you could go to chinatrip.posthaven.com to see Stephen's pictures. So good to talk to you. Thank you for calling. Great tip, Stephen. I'm going to take this opportunity, this commercial break, to move my stuff over right now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's always on the go, Johnny Jett. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jett is here, our travel guru. He is a blogger at johnnyjett.com. And where are you now? You look like you're somewhere fancy.
I had to put my sunglasses on. I'm at the Shadow Creek Golf Course in Las Vegas, watching the Michael Jordan Invitational, Celebrity Invitational golf tournament.
You have to say, we're here in Las Vegas at the Michael Jordan Celebrity. Yeah, and are you playing, John?
I wish I was playing. Oh, no, I was just rubbing elbows with Michael Phelps, and Will Smith was standing next to me. I was like, Will, you got to get out of the way. I'm trying to take a photo.
You got a good life.
I'm living it up. I'm actually here with MGM Resorts, which they have a program called M-Life Rewards.
This is their rewards program. Stuff like this?
This is the rewards program.
Wow.
Yeah, if you're like one of their big-time...
Are you a high roller?
I'm not, but I'm experiencing what the high rollers do get. And actually, even some of the regular people, they can buy into this. It's really cool. Neat. It's a great program.
What fun.
But I'm here to tell you about how you can save some money.
I want to save money. Is this a new website?
No, this is actually a really old website, but... You know, I always see in the chat, your guys' chat room, all these guys are talking about, you should mention Flyer Talk, and they're right. And this is one of them. So it's called flyertalk.com, FlyerTalk.com. And you need to go to it's a forum. So hit forum.
Okay. I'm there right now.
Then you need to go to Mileage Run Deals.
Oh, they have all of them. They have mileage points, traveling, dining, community, Omni, destinations, wireless access. So, like, there's a forum on who has the best and worst wireless access. That would be great. They
have great forums.
That would be great.
I mean, they have a huge community. But my favorite one, and I bookmarked this forum, it's Mileage Run Deals.
What are mileage runs?
Okay, so mileage runs are people who are kind of like me, and I think you like your miles, too.
I love my miles.
Really, who are addicted to their miles, and they're always trying to find the cheapest ticket to get the most amount of miles. And they'll just fly to a destination, even halfway around the world, and not even leave the airport.
Our gadget guy, Dick DiBartolo, will do that to keep his he was Continental, now he's United, but when he was a Continental guy, he would do Newark to JFK just to kind of bump up a segment or something. Crazy. So you're right. Saying do that. Huh?
And they do that.
And these are cheap. Well,
okay, so look at the mileage run deals right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so one of them is, so you know, the thing about this thing is, it's really for kind of nerds. You just have to learn the lingo. So they're all airport codes.
Okay,
first it starts off with the airline. So yeah. Let's take one of the good ones is IA, it says UA is United.
Yep.
And there's also DL for Delta.
Yep.
But check out some of these fares. There's one from IAD, which is Washington DC, to Bogota to EZE, which is Buenos Aires.
Yeah.
$504 round trip.
What?
That's what I'm talking
about. Now, but if you're in D.C., you're going to go crazy. For me, it's not so hot. But if you're in D.C., that's fantastic.
But they have every different city. So there's one for SFO. Okay. So there's one either from San Francisco to Los Angeles. This is just today someone posted it. Yeah. Like an hour ago. Not even an hour ago.
Yeah.
To Milwaukee for $202 AI. AI means all in. But sometimes I've seen fares from San Diego to Boston for $20 one way.
So this isn't just to bump up your mileage. This could also be a really good deal.
Yeah, a lot of these different sites that I recommend that have these newsletters, they look at these message boards because they have these madmen who are always trying to find the best deals. They'll post it, and then other people will send a newsletter out. And sometimes I'll send a special newsletter out when I see a really good deal, like that $20 fare or if there's a $504 fare to South America.
Right.
But usually I look for other cities, not just one city.
Well, and as you've always said, John, it's you're going to get the best deal if you're flexible in terms of when you travel, the airline you travel, because this is how you take advantage of this stuff. It may not match exactly your travel dates, but, you know.
No, but let's say you are going to South America and you live in San Francisco. You know, if you find a fare from D.C., down to South America, buy it from there, and then buy a separate ticket to D.C. Just make sure you give yourself plenty of time in between.
spoken like somebody's been left at the door once or twice.
Well, you just want to make sure, because if you're buying it from two different airlines, they're not going to help you out in the second one.
The other site that you mentioned to me, and I think this is so cool, is a guide to worldwide etiquette. You know, if you travel worldwide, there are different rules for tipping. By itself, tipping is enough to drive me crazy. But then there's gestures. A gesture that in the U.S. would be considered obscene is considered friendly in Italy and vice versa. So it's good to know these things.
So this one is SwissHotel.com. So Swiss, S-W-I-S-S, letter O-T-E-L.com.
Leave out the H.
Leave out the H. Scroll all the way down to the bottom and hit worldwide etiquette.
Oh,
and it has 29 different countries. So not all of them, obviously. There's 193 countries in the world. But for Europe, there's almost 10 countries. So you're going to Italy. So why don't you click Italy?
I am.
Right now.
The tip is usually included in the bill. So you could add a little bit for great service, but you don't need to. That's good to know.
Yeah, most people don't. It's really good to know. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, and you tip 15% because you're an American. And the Italians think, pazzo, he's crazy. What is he doing? Shake hands for greeting, extending pinky and index finger from fist is an insult. Okay, I won't do that. If you tap your temple, he's crazy. Flick your chin. I don't care. This is good.
And it's important. I mean, yeah. You know, I'm half Italian, by the way. And so when I go to Italy,
you know, before
you drink, you say salute. Salute, and then before eating, everyone wishes each other buon appetito.
So it says, do always use formal address with strangers, signor or signora, and touch while conversing. It says, do that, especially in casual situations.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see the different ones around the world. So
it's rude to leave the table during a meal.
Yes, so you know, make sure you go to the bathroom before.
This is good to know.
So this is just, I mean, this is a great idea, by the way, a marketing idea from this one hotel chain to get people to come to their website.
Right.
I mean, it has nothing really to do with them. I mean, right. It has a little bit, but right.
They have Switzerland, but I bet you the Swiss, you know, well, actually, look, no tips expected in Switzerland, period. That's a good thing to know.
Yeah, I was in the Zurich airport a few weeks ago, and I love it. I'm supposed to be back in the Swiss airport in about a couple months.
This is great.
And it's a beautiful
stuff.
Airport, but it's just good stuff even when you're traveling through airports.
Johnny Jet, you're the best. Enjoy the golf tournament. Say hi to Mr. Jackson for me.
Mr. Jordan.
Not Mike. It's not the Michael Jackson. It's the Michael Jordan.
I don't want to say hi to Michael.
Sorry. Easily confused. One's really tall. One's gone. But Mike, say hi to Michael Jordan and Michael Phelps and... just elbow that Will Smith out of the way. He tries to get in all the pictures, I tell you.
Yeah, Billy Kate will. Come on.
JohnnyJet.com is a great place to go. In fact, you know, every week now Johnny's joining us, and I'm learning so much about traveling, and it gives me, I have to admit, the travel bug. Thank you, Johnny.
Well, thanks for having me on. You guys enjoy your weekend.
Enjoy your tournament. 8888. Wow. Great. Makes me want to go somewhere, doesn't it? 8888 Ask Leo. That's a phone number. But not while I'm eating. Not going anywhere while I'm sitting right here. Sam on the line from Rancho Cucamonga, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sam.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I just had a question. I was looking. My upgrade is available now. I'm looking at the Galaxy S4.
Yeah. I didn't know you must be AT&T or you're T-Mobile.
Oh, I'm AT&T.
AT&T, okay.
And I was wondering if I should get the HTC One. I see a lot of good reviews about that.
I know. It's a tough one. I'm going to get both. That's how I solve it, but that's probably not practical for most people.
If I got them for free, I'd probably get that.
I buy them, but it's my job. I bought the HTC One already. You could pre-order at AT&T now. In fact, it's worth pre-ordering if you can at AT&T. They won't have it till April 16th. But if you pre-order, they're offering a $90 HDMI adapter for free as kind of an encouragement, enticement.
I also saw that I know Apple's going to come out with their new one. I have a 4S right now, so I'm kind of wondering if I should just stay with Apple. I like the customizable stuff on the Android.
It is a tough decision. I have not played with, I've only seen the specs and pictures of the Galaxy S4 and the HTC One. So I bought the One. I'll probably buy the 4. But if you can wait till I get them both, I'll give you a review. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Great call. Last call. Asking kind of a fundamental question. Which should I buy? We've got two, you know, really probably three major, I have to make it four. Four major phone updates coming in the next few months. We'll probably see an iPhone 5S soon, like in the next couple of months. That'll be an update to Apple's iPhone 5. As is usually the case, I suspect Apple will make it very much, it'll look exactly the same as an iPhone 5. It'll be software differences, maybe some new capabilities. But I don't expect Apple to make any revolutionary changes for a while. They're kind of stuck a little bit in by their own success. And I don't think you're going to see massive changes to the iPhone platform for a while. The other choices, there are two Android choices that are getting a lot of attention. The Galaxy S4, the next generation Galaxy phone from Samsung. Samsung shares with iPhone pretty much 100% of the smartphone market in the U.S. The rest are also RANs. And the HTC One, these are both late model Android phones. Probably Jelly Bean 422, but we'll see. And they have something the iPhone pioneered, very high-resolution displays. In fact, now higher resolution than the iPhone. Both of them are roughly 4 inches. Actually, the S4 is going to be 4.2.2, and the HTC One is 4.1.2 Android. So that might be a difference. Both screens will be just a shade under 5 inches, but they'll be huge, high resolution, 1920 by 1080, super high res displays, which should look fantastic. Now, I have to say, I haven't seen either one of them, except as most of us have seen them on screen and pictures and in reviews. So I'm going to reserve judgment. But I did buy the HTC One pre-order. I just thought, I think this is it's aluminum. It's more like an iPhone. I think it's an attractive phone. The fourth big new phone that we'll expect soon is a Nokia, the Lumia 928, which Nokia has not announced, but I expect will be out soon. And that will be running a Windows 8 operating system. You could mention, I guess, the BlackBerry Z10 and Q10, but I think only if you're a BlackBerry fan. The question is, well, I'm up for an update. Which phone should I get? And all I can say is, you know, you can read the reviews. We'll put a link to this very thorough review from GSM Arena on our show notes. This just came out. But I have to say, until I have them both in my hands and have used them for a while, it's going to be hard for me to make a recommendation. I don't think you can, to be honest, I don't think you can go wrong if you want the latest, greatest with either the HTC One or the Galaxy S4. I bought the One because I wanted something that was a little bit more pretty hardware design, you know, aluminum and so forth. But there are some, in the spec war, the Galaxy S4 has it all over the HTC One. It's got probably a better camera, later version of Android. It's a little bit faster. Important to me, it has a user replaceable battery, which means I can, you know, run out of juice but pop in a new battery. And it's one of the things I've loved about the Galaxy phones. It has a humidity sensor. I don't know if you care about that. The HTC One does not. You know, it really probably will come down to whether you care more about specs or hardware design, the feel and look of it. And I think both are going to be very strong phones. The 928 will be a very strong phone if you're a Windows phone lover. If you're a BlackBerry lover, I think the Q10 will be a very strong phone. But and it's unknown what Apple's going to do with the iPhone 5S. I don't think there'll be huge differences in the 5S, but we'll see. So if you ask me which, as our last caller did, which to pick, I don't know. I'm in the fortunate position that I get to spend thousands of dollars buying them all. And I guess that's a fortunate position. I get to play with them all. It adds up. You know, I have a paid accounts, fully paid account. I don't do freebies. So I get fully paid accounts of Sprint, T-Mobile, Verizon, and AT&T. Multiple phones on each carrier. Because I believe, at least with a smartphone, that a one-week review is not adequate. You need to use it for a month at least before you can really know, is this the phone? What are the pros? What are the cons? So, ask me in a couple of months. I'll have a better idea for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. Allison in Studio City, California. Hi, Allison.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Listen, two quick things.
Yes.
I got hacked really bad last week and had to spend 4 hours with India to clear up everything, a thing called graphic tech. And at that point, it was offered by Yahoo for a lot of money, but, you know, you're in shock. I said, okay. Everything seems to be fine now, although they took all my contacts and they hacked into eBay.
Yeah, let me back you up just a little bit, because I'm a little worried about the solution, Allison. How did you find out you'd been hacked?
Ironically, two of my friends, my contacts, emailed me and said they didn't find the attachment. I used to be in real estate, so the message said, I have some new listings for you to look at.
Okay.
Interesting properties.
And so that's interesting. And it was a Yahoo mail account, Allison?
Yes.
Yeah, this is for some reason, and I'm not sure if it's the secret question system Yahoo has or whatever, but for some reason this seems to happen a lot. What the bad guy does, they get into your account, then they read your mail, figured out you were a realtor. So they crafted an email that looked like it could come from you.
Mm-hmm.
It's good your friends notified you.
Thank God, because
But that does not mean your computer was hacked.
Hmm? I'm sorry?
That does not mean your computer was hacked, necessarily.
It doesn't?
No, all it means is that somebody figured out your Yahoo password. So what did you do now? And I'm a little worried about what you did next. How did you call India? How did you come to be calling India?
Because I called Yahoo customer service.
And they said...
And I got somebody from India. Then they said, do you want to have this fixed? Now, you can go to Staples if you have one near. You have to leave your computer for a few days. It'll cost you a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. Or we can do it. And so I let them do it. I didn't have the inconvenience.
I'm very nervous about what happened here. I don't believe Yahoo offers this service. Where did you get the number that you called?
Well, they connected me.
Who's they and how? No, I mean, how did you get a hold of them? Where did you get that number to call?
I can't remember if I dialed something they gave me or they connected
me. Yeah, it wasn't Yahoo. So it was somebody pretending to be Yahoo. You don't have...
I got my contacts back, and I don't know what else to say except now eBay...
Did you give him any money, Allison?
You go on.
Did you give him any money?
$199.
And you used a credit card? Did you use a credit card?
Yes.
Okay. So now you've got to cancel that credit card or at least call the credit card company. I believe they are... I believe you got hacked, but you got hacked with social engineering. Let me talk about it when we get back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, that's the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. We're talking about computers, the internet. We're talking about smartphones, home theater, all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it. Now, Allison called before the top of the hour, and I didn't have a whole lot of time to explain what happened, but I'm going to explain what happened now as a cautionary tale for all of you. And I tell you, I often wonder... how a normal person is supposed to survive in technology, because it's just so complicated and tricky. And there are bad people out there who are trying to trick you all the time. And I believe, and I'm not sure, but I believe Allison got tricked. So let's give you the story. And Allison, you can correct me if I make mistakes on this. So Allison's, using her computer. She uses Yahoo for her mail. A lot of people do. There is something wrong with Yahoo Mail because this hack has been around for a couple of years. It happened to me with my gardener. I've never been hacked on Yahoo Mail, but my gardener used it. And I got an email from him saying, help, I'm in London. I got mugged. My passport and all my money are gone. And he mentioned some things that made me think it was him. Can you send me some cash? That's, of course, a red line. My wife at the time said, immediately, Owen, we'll send you some money. And I said, whoa, hold on, wait a minute. Call Owen. See if he's really in London. He wasn't. His email got hacked. And what these guys do, it's very interesting. This is a bespoke hack, a custom-tailored hack. Once they get your password, and I'm not sure how they do this. It's probably some form of social engineering. There's lots of holes in this stuff, and... once they get your password somehow to your email, they log on to your Yahoo Mail, and they read your email. And they read Alice's mail and say, oh, she's a realtor. All right, they made some notes. Now they craft emails to everybody in your Yahoo address book that sound like they come from you, but seems very common. I don't know what happened with Allison, but it seems very common. They'll say, give me money. It's an emergency. Oh, my gosh, I'll pay you back the minute I get home, but I need some, wire me some money. Of course, it's going to be some sort of scam. Maybe they're going to have an email attachment that's going to infect your computer. But there's going to be some sort of scam involved because these guys are in it for the money. Now, if we stop right there, the only thing Allison got hacked was her email. And she could go to her Yahoo account and change the password, and it's done. It's done. My suggestion is to maybe stop using Yahoo Mail and start using Google Mail, which doesn't seem to have this problem. Yahoo Mail's getting hacked a lot. I don't know why. Unfortunately, And I'm not sure where she got this number. My suspicion is it might have been a pop-up on her computer. She got a number for Yahoo support. And they charged her $199 to fix her computer. Now, remember, there's nothing wrong with her computer. The hack was on Yahoo's side. Somebody got her password. So now some problems have happened. Now, somebody's kind of talked her into, A, giving them $200 with a credit card. So now they have $200 and your credit card number. You immediately want to cancel that credit card. And I bet you, during that fix process, they said, well, we would like to log on to your computer to fix it. And they did. Now, what they did is not fix it because there was nothing wrong with it. What they did is they put some malware on your computer. So your computer is now infected. You see how this works? Support from Yahoo, they say on their website, is always free of charge. Certain companies not affiliated with us may pretend to represent Yahoo and try to offer Yahoo services, support for Yahoo services as a fee. Please know we take this activity seriously. It wasn't Yahoo. Yahoo does not charge $199. So, Allison, I hate to say it, but that money, not only is that money probably gone, although you could call your credit. In fact, what I would do now, immediately, call the credit card company. Say, I was tricked into this fraudulent charge. Stop the charge. Change the credit card number, because they got the number. But you still have the third problem. If you allowed them access to your computer over the internet, which I suspect you did, to, quote, fix it, they broke it. They put malware on there. So now the next thing you have to do is reinstall Windows or bring it to somebody. The only way to really fix this is to, you know, back up your data, erase the hard drive, and reinstall Windows. And then you'll have a known good copy, and you can update Windows, do run all those updates till you've got all the critical updates installed. Shouldn't ask for any more. Restore your data. And then the next time somebody says, give me $199, I'll fix your computer. Don't. Don't. It's a known, really a common hack. Sometimes, this is why I was asking her, well, how did you know it was hacked? Because one way they do it, and if this happens to you, remember Uncle Leo said, they call up and say, hello, I am calling from Microsoft, and we have detected a virus activity on your computer. We would like to fix it. And they'll walk you through a whole thing that really proves that you have viruses on your computer. Does nothing of the sort, of course. But to the uninitiated, it looks real. And then they say, I can fix this. Just let me in. And they'll get you in. You know, you let them access your computer remotely, and boom, you're dead. So, unfortunately, Allison had one hack that got much, much, much worse. I am so sorry, Allison. I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings. This is not an uncommon scam. You do need to do immediately change your Yahoo Mail password. That'll lock the bad guy out. You should look at all your settings, though. Your recovery, he may have, once he gets to your system, he might change the recovery secret questions, the recovery email, all that stuff. So you'll need to really go through all of your settings in Yahoo and make sure everything's correct, that it's not forwarding mail to a bad guy. I think you should just dump that Yahoo Mail account, get a Gmail account, turn on second factor authentication, then it's safer. Second thing to do, call the credit card company, cancel that payment if you can. You should be able to, unless it was a long time ago. Stop that payment. There's no $199. There's nobody. That's not Yahoo. And cancel that credit card number. Get a new credit card. They'll be familiar with this scam. You might, if you really feel like being a Robin Hood, call Yahoo and tell them what happened. They know about it. And really, the most valuable thing about this call is for everybody listening to be aware of this. Don't, you know, be very, very careful about who you give your credit card number to. I never give out a credit card number on the phone, ever, ever, ever. Because, you know, and if you have to, say, let me get a number, I'll call you back. I'm sorry that happened to you, Allison. John in South Bend, Indiana, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm well, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I feel sorry for that last caller, man.
Yeah, you know, you kind of, I started sensing something was going wrong, and then I realized, oh boy.
Yeah, hey, I called you before. I don't know if you remember me or not.
Oh, sure, I remember you.
Yeah. Hey, now I'm setting up a wireless network here. I have one at my parents' house, and we set it up with the WPA password, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to set up another one, and I was wondering, you know, because I've heard that you can set it up with MAC addresses as the only way you get in.
Yeah, don't do that. That's a lot of effort for nothing.
The
only thing, okay, let me give you the talk. It's a good thing to do this talk regularly, too. How to secure a wireless network. There's only one thing to do, period. And that is turn on WPA2 encryption. You do that in the router. You'll be setting a password. Set a good one. Don't make it, you know, monkey123. Make it a good password. Best is, of course, a random combination of letters and numbers, but that's hard to remember. But get a good password. Nothing else does any good. Actually, when we come back, a couple more things you might want to do while you're in there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, this is John. I called you before. Remember me? Yeah, John. I remember you.
Postage meter companies used to have the monopoly on printing postage.
I called about that thing, the thing with the thing. Remember that? Yeah, I remember that. And I told you, go to Gazelle and sell that thing. Get a new thing. You remember that? We're getting ready for these new phones, the Galaxy S4, this HTC One. Maybe you're thinking, I want an iPhone 5S. Now, we don't know when Apple's going to announce that, but I could tell you a way to get a quote now on your old iPhone that'll be good for 30 days, give you time to decide what you're going to do, what you're going to buy, take the data off. It's Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. Let's just do it. It's always fun to do this. I'll go to Gazelle.com. This is a place that'll buy your old iPhone, Samsung phone, even your BlackBerry, your iPads, your iPods, your MacBooks, your Macs. So I have an iPhone 5, and I'm really getting excited about the iPhone 5S. Mine's AT&T. Of course, I got the 64 gig. It's in good condition, a little dinged up. You know, I've had it for a year. $370. Whoa! That's pretty good. I'm going to make a profit on this thing. So, you know, say get paid, add that to your box. But as long as you're doing this, let's sell some other stuff. Maybe you've got an old iPod lying around or an iPad. You could find somebody to buy that too. AT&T third generation iPad, last generation. It was 32 gigs, $260. Now, here's the deal. They're going to send you a postage-paid box. They pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck. I think we've got more than a buck here. You pile that stuff into the box, but you have 30 days to do it. See, this is good for the next 30 days. It's locked in. So find some more stuff. Maybe you've got an old iMac or an iMac Mini. I got a Mac Pro I'd love to unload. Gazelle will buy it. Then, this is the nice part, they'll either send you a check, a PayPal credit if you need it right away, or, and I recommend this, an Amazon gift card. If you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, this is a good deal because you get a bonus 5% when you get the Amazon gift card. Quick payment. They delete your data. I believe it or not, you know, you're asked to estimate the quality, but of course, when they get it, they look at it. And I have heard many times where people said, they actually gave me more money. They said, no, this is in better condition than you said it was. Gazelle's pretty amazing. I think that probably explains why over the last few years, Gazelle has sent its customers $50 million to 500,000 users. You could be one of them. GAZELLE, gazelle.com. Sell your old iPhone, iPad, Galaxy phone, Android phone. Get some cash today to buy the next new thing. Recycle the easy way. Gazelle.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Vince in Long Beach, California. You're next. Hi, Vince. Vince. Hello, Vince. He's listening to the radio. Caller. You know, if you listen to the radio when you're calling us, the problem is that we have a, get this, 40-second delay. So Vince is going to say, in 40 seconds, Oh, hi, Leo. And I'm going to be gone because I can't wait 40 seconds. I'm sorry. Sean in Detroit, Michigan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sean.
It's all right. I mean, hey, Lee, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
All right. Okay, quick question. Okay, I have an issue.
Is your issue with me?
No, not at all.
Oh, good. It's with your, if it's, you're with your computer, I can help you.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to upgrade my camera because all I was using was point and shoot with my iPhone 5.
Yeah.
So I bought the T4i Rebel, and it's, you know, and it's on its way here.
That's a great camera. But what's the issue?
The issue is that I need to know how to use it.
Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, it's not that hard. You've only used a camera phone, have you, and a point and shoot camera before?
Yeah, just point and shoot and yeah, the phone.
So, well, the good news about the T4i, which is an interchangeable lens camera, is out of the box, you can use it as a point and shoot. Just turn it to program mode. You won't be changing lenses, and just shoot. And you'll get amazingly good images right out of the box.
Yeah, but also I want to learn how to, like, film, like, different things and,
yeah,
you know, really get into it.
But well, that's the beauty of this. This camera will grow with you.
Right. But I wanted to look on different videos and books and things. But in terms of videos, I know there's a lot of things on YouTube, but I wanted to know what's the best one.
Yeah, that's a good question. Let me see if Linda has any digital photography classes. Boy, I bet you she does. Linda.com, Lynda. Yeah, they have some really good classes taught by friends of mine. Now, this is a paid site, but the first week is free. So you can watch them. And these are much higher quality videos than the YouTube videos. These are really pro. There's 328 digital photography courses. Watch some of the beginner ones anyway. Just to give you an idea, you know, Foundations of Photography, they have a series. Lighting for Photographers, the composition one by Ben Long. I love Ben. He's such a great guy. This would be a great for anybody, because composition is the same no matter what camera you're using. It's what you're taking a picture of, you know. And these are really – so that's a site that's designed for people who really want to learn. But it's not free, but the first week is. So there's a that's a kind of a starting point. There are some really good photography sites. Creative Live is very good, too. CreativeLive.com. A lot of my friends do shows there as well.
Okay. Now, I have one more question before I go.
Sure.
What is the best network attached storage? You know, under $200.
Well, none of them are that inexpensive, Sean, because you got to get the box, which could be $200 to $500, and then you have to put drives in it. So I would look at the Synology, Synology. They have two drive containers, and two drives is at least less expensive than four or more. And they are really good in terms of software, and that's really why you're buying a NAS. Synology, Synology. GY, and I would look at the personal and home office NASes, like the Disk Station 411, for instance, is a good choice. But nothing's going to be $200 because you've got to buy the enclosure, and then you have to buy the disks that go into it. Let me look at the DS112, which is a one bay NAS server for home users. So that means one disk, less storage, but one disk, you know, and it, you know, you, let's see what the prices are. I'm shop around here and look at different people who are selling this thing. Oh, it's taking me some time to do it. I would guess Amazon's got it probably for a few $100. Yeah, $299.99. Actually, here's a, is that with, that's diskless. See, this is the problem. These all, like the two bay is a $200, but doesn't have any drives in it. Now, if you have some old drives lying around, you can always plop those in. That'll save you. The Disk Station one bay, which is the least expensive, the DS112, is $150 without a disk. You put a 2 terabyte drive in there, it's $350. $200 is a little light for a NAS, but boy, those are nice. It stands for network attached storage. And the idea is, instead of hooking it up directly to a computer, you hook it up to the network via Ethernet, maybe to your router. And that drive becomes visible to all your computers, so you can use it as a centralized backup disk that will back up all your computers on a schedule, or as a media server. You can put your music, your photos, your videos on there. Some people are saying the Western Digital MyBook Live, I'm not really crazy about that. It's affordable. I would go with Synology. I think they're a little more expensive, but I think you get a little bit more bang for your buck. The terabyte MyBook Live is about $130. So that's a good choice if you're really in the budget category. That's network-attached storage as well. Doesn't go to a computer. It goes to a router. Thanks for the call, Sean. I appreciate it. We'll go to Costa Mesa next. Sam is on the line. Hi, Sam. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Phil. I currently have a Time Warner cable for internet access on a cable modem. It's running me $100 a month.
Wow. Just for the internet access? No, that must be TV, too.
Oh, no. No, my Dish network is an additional $100
a month. Whoa. $100? What do you get for $100 on Time Warner?
A cable modem.
How fast?
It's fast.
Yeah, you must be getting their top-of-the-line product, because that sounds like an awful lot.
Yeah, that's why I'm calling.
Holy cow. $100. You must have a burst plan, right? A 30 megabits per second download, something like that.
I mean, all I do is go on motorcycle form.
I would call Time Warner and say, "Hey, I don't want the you're getting the it's clear you're getting the caviar internet access." Most of these cable companies will start at $40 a month, and you pay more for more speed. Time Warner advertises the 30 megabits per second download is $50, so I don't know what you're getting for $100, but you're overpaying. You're definitely overpaying. Call Time Warner, say, I want to cut this in half. You should probably be able to get $50. In fact, in the chat room, they're saying, I pay $51 for Time Warner internet and basic cable. Somebody, when you were talking to Time Warner, said, I want the best. What's the best you offer? What could cost me the most money possible? Because that's a lot. That's probably too much. And everybody in the chat room is saying, oh, no, it's much less, much less. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And, didn't I just talk to Sean in Detroit? Is this the same Sean? Hi, Sean. Leo Laporte here.
Yeah, Leo, no, it's a different
Sean. Different Sean. Okay.
That's right. Hey, about November-ish. Before Thanksgiving, I have a Mac. I have an iMac and a MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was in November, I've been using the FaceTime HD camera on my MacBook Pro.
Right.
And so what I've been doing with it is I do the webcam upload to YouTube. And so... It went from a 16:9 format to suddenly a 4:3 format for the video. So you have the black on sidebar
right.
on the side.
Right. Instead of widescreen, it went to the traditional kind of squarish image.
Exactly.
Yeah. What do you use to record? Are you using GarageBand? I'm not GarageBand. iMovie.
No, I started using iMovie recently, but for convenience sake, I sometimes when I have this issue, what I'm using is YouTube's API.
Oh, you're using Flash.
Recording.
Ah.
Yeah, Flash Adobe. Right.
Right.
And so
you're doing it right from the YouTube page.
Right on the YouTube page.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, if you tried it on any Mac that you own or anybody else listening tried it on their Mac device, it's not working.
Interesting.
I have a bug reported to Adobe, but nobody's been...
Nobody cares. Everybody's... Flash is so broken. Everybody is... All right, so... I should try it on my system here. I've never recorded directly in.
I had one guy who I've been emailing, and he's been said they have it on a list of their items.
Oh, so it's a known bug.
Well, yeah, it's a known bug.
Well, doesn't it? So it works. Does it work all right if you use iMovie?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a flash bug.
It's a flash bug.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I have a feeling Flash is flushed at this point, to steal a joke from the chat room.
My understanding, and I don't understand much about Chrome. I mean, I use Chrome on my PC and Safari on my Mac.
Mm-hmm.
So is there more than one Flash maker?
No, it's all Adobe, although Chrome comes with its own Flash built in, but it's still Adobe Flash.
Oh, okay.
So any bug that you have in Flash, well, it's different. It may be a different version, so the bug may be fixed in some versions. You know, another way to do this would be with Google Plus. You can create a Google Hangout, Live that goes straight to YouTube. I mean, I guess you've solved it. You use an iMovie; it uploads to YouTube. You've solved the problem.
Right, yeah. And Google Hangouts work just fine.
They don't use Flash. The future is not, and Google's going to move away from this. YouTube's already moving away from it. If you go to youtube.com/HTML5, you could turn that on. You might try that. HTML5 has an ability, a Flash-like ability to record, and I don't know if they've turned that on YouTube, but if they have, that would solve the problem.
Well, they turn it on to play the videos, but I don't think that they turn it on to record.
Yeah, it may not. Yeah,
I'll send it to the guy. I've been talking to several Google developers, and maybe I'll ask him.
Ask him, because that's a capability built into HTML5, the ability to record. And as I remember, they just recently turned it on.
It was like last year or something.
Yeah. So that is a capability built into HTML5. HTML5 is replacing Flash. We can thank Apple for this, because remember, very famously, in 2010 when the iPad came out, it didn't support Flash. And all of a sudden, websites said, oh, yeah, yeah, if you want somebody to use, fortunately, the website said, oh, nobody uses the iPad, until everybody did. And then the iPhone didn't. Actually, maybe it started in 2007 with the iPhone. And so Flash has ever since been fading from sight. What Apple wants to replace it with, what Google wants to replace it with, I think pretty much everybody now wants to replace it with, is a standard. Flash is owned by Adobe. HTML5 is owned by nobody. So they want to replace it with a standard form of web video called, that's part of HTML5. Unfortunately, the standard is a little in flux.
Well, then you'd be able to fix your own problem.
Yeah. Oh, heaven forfend.
You know, instead of waiting on one company.
Well, and Adobe is really problematic, because right now, Flash has had so many flaws in it that allow bad guys to access your computer. Sure. It's really become, and I imagine that what has happened is Adobe has devoted all of its developers to fixing those. That's an emergency. So maybe there's nobody around left to work on getting it to work. I don't know why it went to 4.3. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah. It's a bug. Anyway, that's the answer.
Try to press them to convert the uploader to HTML5, which would probably be much easier to use anyways. I don't know why they haven't switched over.
Yeah, see if they can. That would be the way to do it. You bet. Yeah.
Well, hey, I wanted to say one last thing is that, I also have an amateur radio call sign, and I watch you guys are doing great with that Ham Nation.
Oh, thank you so much. What's your call sign?
Oh, it's K8, it's a KHZ. And so
K8KHZ?
Yeah, it's a kilohertz. So if I...
Oh, I like it.
Popular if I can't give it away.
that's a good vanity call sign. I'm W6TWT. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
All right, 7-3, Sean. Take care. Appreciate it. Yeah, that's not surprising that Flash has bugs. Ooh, what a surprise! Some of the bugs are more serious. They allow bad guys to attack you, to put stuff on your computer, sometimes to turn on your camera and microphone without your permission. Things like that. So I imagine Adobe saying, "We probably should fix that first, and then we'll worry about Sean's problem." It's maybe a lower priority right now. Wilbur in Williamstown, New Jersey. Hi, Wilbur. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. How how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Okay, sir. if a couple of your people want to come in here and kick me in the butt, it's fine because I've been running around for a long time here without any communications. I'm a paraplegic, which means I can't even change a flat tire. So I'm asking you to recommend a cell phone for me in case I get in trouble.
Yeah, it's a good idea. You know, my mom's 80. She's not a paraplegic, but, of course, mobility issues happen as you get older. And she finally got a cell phone and was able to, through AARP, which I'm sure you're a member of, get a cell phone for, I think.
No, I don't belong to that.
You don't? All right. You're a young guy.
I'm
old enough. You must be. So she was able to get I think it was $10 a month cell phone. It's not a very good cell phone.
Well, I want a good one.
Yeah. And do you want it for just emergency purposes, or do you want it to be able to make calls and so forth?
No, I think I just want it mainly for emergency.
Yeah.
Because I'm home quite a bit of the time, and I have two phones here.
Are you on Medicaid?
Yes.
I got one that might be free for you. This is a company called SafeLink Wireless, and they do offer free cell phones and minutes for Medicaid participants if you're eligible income-wise. So it would be worth taking a look at that. Now, these aren't really phones that you would just, you know, chat with your friends on, although you do get probably enough minutes, 250 minutes, to do that a little bit. But mostly the idea is to have a cell phone in your house. Now, the thing to remember, a cell phone does not work with 911 as well as a landline. You can also call your local cell provider like AT&T. They often have a disability section. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. That Giz Whiz is here. Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. And he happens to be kind of a gadget hound, and he collects fun and interesting gadgets. He's got one for us today, and he won't tell me what it is. This is going to be a very short segment.
Yeah, it is. Well, I'll tell you now. So, Leo, it's from ThinkGeek, and I thought it was one of their April Fool jokes. Products.
Uh-huh.
And I called them. I said, this is the funniest. And the guy said, it's real. I'm going to send you one. All right. So that's part one. So someone's walking away and you forgot to tell them something, but they're out of earshot.
Yeah.
So the universal signal that you want to talk to them is put your thumb in your ear, your pinky by your mouth.
Yeah.
Yes. Call me.
And you wiggle.
Yes. And you wiggle. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Call me.
Has
yeah.
The Bluetooth headset glove that works.
No.
Yes.
So now we should mention it's ThinkGeek.com, and they do every April Fool's. They do three or four crazy products that were never intended to be for sale. Sometimes though, they actually make it on sale because people say, "I want it." But this, yes, so they, I can see why you'd think this was, but this wasn't, huh?
No, it's not. So there you go. So the little speaker is in one finger,
The
microphone's down at the pink.
Oh, I would love this, actually.
And the reason I love it right now is maybe it's an intro price, or maybe they didn't sell, but they're $35 right now. The original price is or will be $70, but it works very well.
Wow.
So on Tuesday, I'll do it on the Gizwiz, and you can call me, and I'll answer you on my glove.
I would like to hear how it sounds. And these are, by the way, capacitive gloves, so that means you can use them. You can continue to wear the gloves and use your smartphone screen.
Yes, and you get a matching glove for the other hand, lest you be cold.
I guess it'd be kind of tiresome after a while, though, to hold your hand like this.
Yeah, I know, but I think the shock value is worth it.
Yeah.
Especially when you're on a bus and you just go, hello.
Hello, you're talking to
me. You know, you'll get a seat right away if you don't have a seat. This guy's wacko.
Talk to the hand. That is very, very strange. Wow.
That's great.
Wow.
So it's called Glove Handset, $35, sharperimage.com.
Oh, Sharper Image? No, ThinkGeek.
I'm sorry. I'm ThinkGeek.
Don't send them to the Sharper Image. They don't have
it. I know. And you must have a Bluetooth phone, and it charges via micro USB. And you dial out by using a voice dial.
Dick, why are your gloves plugged into the wall? Oh, they're charging. It's exactly. Just leave them there for a while.
Are they heated gloves? No.
No.
Heated gloves are so yesterday.
If you go to Dick's website, gizwiz.biz, G-I-Z-W-I-Z.B-I-Z, you'll have more information about this product and, of course, all the products he mentions on his various appearances, including ABC's World News Now. And he does a podcast for us at a show called The Giz Wiz. And I guess you're going to be on the Turner Movie
TCM,
channel.
Yeah, in October.
Turner
TCM.
Classic Movies. Yep. Wow.
I'll remind you several hundred
Did you bring
times.
Any gadgets?
No, I didn't go that far.
All right. If you go to the link that says What the Heck Is It, you could play the What the Heck Is It game, by the way. A great way to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, but all you have to do is come up with a crazy answer as to what the heck is this gadget that he's got a close-up picture of. Thank you, Dick. Stick around. We'll do the Giz Fizz right after the radio show.
I'll be here.
Bill in Missoula, Montana. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, that commercial.
Hey!
My little ESAT.
You have a problem. What's going on?
Well, I just upgraded to, I got smart security, and I just upgraded to version 6.
Okay.
And they offered a download that will help protect your laptop. If it's stolen, you can track it.
Yeah, those are nice features. I like that. But is it not working?
Well, I've been trying to get into it to sign up.
Ah.
And it says they want an email and a password. And, you know, they give you a username and a password when you sign up with them. I've put in all different kinds of variations of that username and the password, and it keeps saying incorrect email.
Well, they are a sponsor, but I don't really do tech support for them. I'm sure there's a solution to this. Either call them, or if you've called them and not had any satisfaction, send me an email, leo@techguylabs.com, and I'll hook you up with the big man at ESET, and we'll get that solved. It's probably just an account issue that they can fix with the push of a button. Rich in Florence, Montana. We're going to stay in Montana. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
Well, I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, glad to do it. What can I do for you?
Well, probably nothing. I have a feeling.
I'm good at that, by the way. Just ask me anytime.
Yeah. Well, we recently upgraded to our Dish Hopper.
Yeah.
And
that's the one. That's one that's driving all the networks crazy because it lets you skip commercials.
Well, I do that anyways.
it just makes it easier. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're being sued by ABC, CBS. CBS even. This was kind of shocking. Told their interactive arm not to give them the Best of CES award, even though they had given them the award. They said, you must retract it because we're suing them.
Oh, wow.
I think it's great. I love the Hopper.
Yeah, I do too.
Good.
But, well, our problem is, and the technician that hooked it all up couldn't fix this
Uh-oh.
Either.
Yeah.
But when we hooked the Hopper up to the TV with the HDMI cable.
Yeah.
All we get is a green screen.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like it could be copy protection. You make sure you might try another HDMI cable. Is it a late model television?
No, we've probably had this 7 years.
It's possible the TV doesn't support something called HDCP, High Def Content Protection. You can thank the movie companies and their paranoia about piracy for this one. Devices that play back high def content require that every device, including even the cable along the chain, be HDCP compliant. Make sure you're plugging the HDMI cable into the right ports, of course. That could give you the wrong thing, but I presume since HDMI is, it's really, there's only one thing that could possibly even attach to, that it's probably an HDCP issue. Chat room saying, make sure you're on the right input and all that. I'm sure you've tried all of that. It's one of those things you might have to fuss with the resolution on the TV. An older TV may not auto-sense the right resolution. It might be that port's bad. Try another port. Try another cable. That's an easy thing to do. Always a good idea to do the easy things first. Should work. Should work. If you've got HDMI, you shouldn't have too much trouble. And Jeff C. in the chat room is telling me that you can go to monoprice.com. I don't think this would be a last resort. They have an HDMI to composite converter that will get around the HDCP, but of course it will lower the quality of your video considerably. The green screen with HDMI is often a case of copy protection. Thank you, movie industry, for making pirates of us all. And on that note, I'm going to say goodbye to you. We're done for the day. Now, you visit our website, techguylabs.com. We'll put links there to all the stuff we talked about and additional information as well. In fact, you'd be doing me a great service if you think of something to add that as a comment to the webpage. Always free, always available, techguylabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today, and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.